Well, it's great to see you this morning. At the end of the creation week, God declared in the book of Genesis at the end of chapter 1, God saw that all he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and morning the sixth day. In the third chapter, we find that sin enters into the picture because of the rebellion of both Adam and Eve. And the New Testament endorses that's when sin did enter. In the book of Romans chapter 5, and specifically verse 12, therefore, just as through one man sin entered into the world, and death through sin, and so death spread to all men, because all sinned. And as a result, a lot of consequences came with that. Not only the couple is now separated from God, but all sorts of other consequences showed up, like aging process, they began to die, thorns and thistles, and nature is not going to cooperate with you as it once did. And there's just going to be a lot of negative things that are going to enter into the picture. All the sorts of sins, those things enter in, or the possibilities for those. With Adam and Eve, we also see a definite self-awareness, self-consciousness. There's a sense of shame, embarrassment. A wall goes up between Adam and Eve. You know, they're starting to throw each other the bus, blame each other. You know, they're starting to practice like self-preservation at all costs. Those sort of things start showing up. And there can be a lot of suffering in this life. And Solomon noted in the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 1, what is crooked cannot be straightened. That is, everything here cannot be fixed. There are simply things in this life that cannot be fixed. No matter how much money you have, they cannot be fixed. What is lacking cannot be counted. Because in much wisdom there is much grief, and increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Maybe a good example of that would be, maybe the further you rise up in a government, you realize how much waste is there. How much inefficiency happens to be there. Maybe in certain senses, how much corruption surrounds you. Solomon was aware of that. I mean, Solomon was a king, and Solomon could not straighten out everything in his kingdom. There were things that he could not eradicate that were there, even though he was the law of the land as far as the human authority. In the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 23, because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 5 is an interesting passage where it says, there is an evil I have seen under the sun, like an air which goes forth from the ruler. Folly is set in many exalted places, while rich men sit in humble places. That's an interesting passage. Because sometimes people get the idea that rich and wicked always go together, rich and wicked. That's a passage where rich is in the context of the people that are more qualified, the people that are more experienced, the people that maybe should be ruling, but they don't get elected to office. Fools get elected to office. Very qualified, competent individuals that have done well in life are overlooked. Maybe they've had small businesses, or they've had farms or whatever. They've done quite well. They don't get elected to office. The fool, folly, is set in high places. And that frustrated Solomon, that the people that hold offices, even in his administration, were not the most qualified people. In fact, some of them were very incompetent. But somehow or another, they got that position, or they were elected to that office. And that frustrated him. How do you handle suffering, though? How do you handle the suffering and inequities and injustices of life? And in order to handle the suffering of life, you have to have meaning. You have to have a reason why. You have to have an antidote for the suffering. You have to have a reason why to keep on trying, a reason why to keep on living. And it's not just a sense of meaning. It can't be that, well, I have this sense of meaning or sense of purpose. It has to be a purpose that's real or valid. It has to be meaning that is real or valid. Psalm 73 would be a good place to start on passages like that, as The writer was very frustrated that it seemed like life was very unfair. People that are very selfish and cruel had easy lives. And someone like himself that was trying to be responsible had a very difficult life. And so, and that almost took him out. That almost took him down as he contemplated that. But in verse 16 he said, "When I pondered to understand this, it was troublesome in my sight." I tried to make sense of this. "Until I came into the sanctuary of God." The writer faced the same dilemma that some people in our culture faced of, why are the Kardashians so famous? It's kind of that same sort of like, why are they the most famous people in the country? And why is Kim the most famous woman in the world? Yeah, the same sort of thing the writer here said, like, hey, this doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, but then the writer said, until I came into the sanctuary of God. That is, until I came to worship. I came to worship, and he would come to like the temple. We would say we came to work. We came and met with the assembly. And then it says, then I perceived their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction, the destroying in a moment. The writer was envying the wicked, who were very successful. And he was faithful, but he was struggling like to pay his bills. And like some of you, I'm faithful, I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'm struggling with this and this and this and this. And I see somebody here that's not giving God the time of day, and it just looks like, I mean, their lives are just, you know, looking like they're going real smooth. And the writer said, that really bothered me until I thought about, wait a minute, ooh, this life is very short, and there's a judgment, and God's going to hold them accountable, and they're going to die, and all of a sudden they're going to be before God unprepared. And all of a sudden the writer said, I don't envy that. I don't envy that at all. I'm in a much better place. And so, going to get over that. That's meaning. That's a sense of purpose. That's a reason why. And that goes along with, you know, it's not enough to think that you have an answer. Rather, you need actual answers. The illusion that you have an answer does not help. That actually is worse. If you're under the illusion you have an answer, but it's not the real answer or the right answer. Real and truthful answers are needed. And so Jesus would say, if you're persecuted for following him, for being a Christian, for wearing his name, for standing up for him, to say, yeah, I do believe in Jesus, I do believe in God, yes, the Bible is God's word, and you're persecuted for that, you're ridiculed for that. He said, rejoice, leap for joy, be glad, for your reward in heaven is great. That's meaning, that's purpose. You're headed to a much better place. You're in a good spot. That would be a reason to be persecuted. That would be a reason to endure some suffering. That would be a suffering that's not pointless. That's very meaningful. Jesus suffered, and I suffer with him. In Romans chapter 8, verse 18, here's the way Paul worded it in the book of Romans, as he was an individual that went through a lot of suffering. And suffering beyond the type of suffering sometimes we endure. Because, you know, we pray for people that have illnesses and sickness and things like that. And Paul's struggling with that too, but Paul's also in this category of shipwreck, beaten with rods, cast into prison, run out of town, hated, people throwing rocks at him. He also has that element of suffering too. For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us. Is that everything that Paul went through, and it's quite an extensive list in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, this list of things that he had endured in being an apostle, like sleepless nights and not having enough to eat and long travels on foot and hostile crowds and, you know, out in the ocean and your boat's gone. And that happens more than once. And so, and you're just out there on a piece of wood drifting around. There you go. That's some suffering. And he said, but if you put all that on a scale and put heaven on the other scale, it just balances the scale all over the place. It just, heaven just deadens the scale. It just drops it to the point where nothing that you can put on the other side will even get close to balancing it out. That side is just down. It's so heavy. That's how weighty heaven is. And that gives your life meaning and purpose as well, as that God says, you don't understand how great the next life is going to be. You just don't understand the nature of that existence, of that is going to be so, so beyond what you have right now. I think of it a little bit like a little baby, like, you know, Barnabas is in the back and, you know, we're driving, and me and the kids were driving up the gorge on Thursday, and near the end, Barnabas is done with this 3.5 hour trip and whatever. And I'm going, I understand. But see, he doesn't know we're 10 minutes away. He's back there crying. He doesn't know we're 10 minutes to our destination. And I said, Barnabas, if I was you, I'd be crying too. I don't, you know, if I was stuck in a car seat and stuff like that. And there's really, at least I can, you know, I can distract myself a little bit as an adult and look at scenery and, you know, etc. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing of, it's kind of with what you have as a baby, your world is so small as a baby. Everything has to be handed to you, etc. And your world as an adult. And heaven is kind of like the world of an adult, of you just don't know how great it gets. You just don't know all the experiences that are out there as an adult that are just, you don't know all the amazing foods that are out there. You don't understand all the amazing experiences out there. You don't understand what is up ahead of you that is so amazing. I think God's trying to say the same thing to us, is that it's a little bit like that, but just even beyond that comparison. I mean, I wouldn't want to be a baby again. You know? No. You know, I mean, I like my freedom. I like my mobility and stuff like that. Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. So, it's not just heaven. It's not just, I can endure the suffering because I have this great reward out here. Okay. But it's also because I'm doing the right thing. But it's also this. It's that in the process of enduring, in the process of being patient, I'm turning into a very strong person. And that's meaning for my life, is that it's like I'm exercising muscles that I need to exercise. I'm exercising my heart. I'm exercising my character. And it says, let endurance have its perfect result so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And may I suggest to you that this is the only exercise that works as far as developing character. You'll go to garage sales and you'll see a lot of exercise gadgets. And you go like, oh, you bought the ones, you know, the late night TV ones. The ones that like look, hey, just put this belt on and you'll just lose weight. Boy, yeah, I mean, that'd be pretty nice. Just put it on. Put it on and you will just, there you go. All it is a belt. And usually you see that stuff at garage sales. And there's a lot of stuff out there that is somewhat like that in the category of this will help you grow as a person, but it's the same thing like just put the belt on and you'll lose weight, or the pill that you'll just burn fat. This is the legitimate way to exercise your heart and character. That is of following God exercising the virtues that God says to exercise. That's really the only way that growth really happens. Everything else to me would just be an illusion of growth and maturity and that sort of thing. And this is 1 Peter chapter 1. In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you've been distressed by various trials, so that the proof of your faith, that is, what your faith looks like after the trial, that's like the proof of your faith. Not the faith you have before the trial, but what sort of condition are you in after the trial? How do you come out of the trial? That's the proof of your faith. And he says, if you come out strong, you go through it with the right attitude, then that's more precious than gold. That's more precious than all the money in the world. That's more precious than a garage full of physical possessions. The jet ski, the boat, whatever you want to put in there. The sports car. That's more precious than that. Because you can have all of that and be miserable. You can have all of that and be, and just not enjoy yourself at all. And you can have all of that. And what's more precious than that is that you're someone like Paul who's learned to be content in whatever circumstance you're in. And you're someone who has a joyful heart. You're someone like Paul and Silas that you're in prison in stocks and you're singing hymns to God. That's the valuable thing. If you can get there, then you've really accomplished something in life. He says, be more precious than gold, though which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise, glory, honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And that's why you want to be someone that's able to do hard things. So you can do something else even harder. And so you can say to yourself, I have confidence and my faith is genuine. And it works. I was able to do that and keep a good heart about it and have patience and keep my mind in the right place. Okay? That means I'm making progress. That's a good test of who I am. The great advantage of being a Christian is that we have been given the best possible meaning and purpose and reason why we should endure and have the best attitude. We've been given the best reason for that. We have the best purpose. Why should I do that? Why should I act that way? Nobody has a higher reason than we do. It's just that, I don't want to make a scene. No, it's a lot higher than that. It's that I want to grow and mature. And it's even more than that. I want to glorify God in the process. And if it's even more than that, and I want to bring others to God in the process. Kind of like Paul and Silas. The prisoners were listening to them. And at least the jailer ends up becoming a Christian that night, possibly as connected with how Paul and Silas were behaving themselves. It's interesting because they asked those men, sirs, what must we do to be saved? They didn't ask any of the other prisoners that. I mean, are you living in such a way that of all the people in the room, if someone said, who do I ask here if I really had a question about how do I get myself right with God? Well, I don't think you're going to ask the person that is not handling life well. You might ask the person like, they're in jail and their feet are in stocks and they're singing praise to God. That's the person I'd ask. Because it looks like that their relationship with God is real and genuine and working. And so there's a lot at stake concerning other people. You know you're on the wrong road. I mean, and we probably have all been here to an extent, that there is a wrong way to handle suffering in life. There's a wrong way to handle disappointment in life. Like Cain, Job's wife, Judas, all handled pain, suffering in the wrong way. One way is you don't like your existence. You know, I hate my life. You wish you'd never been born. You might even say that. You might even look up and say, I didn't ask to be born. You know, I know there are people that kind of have that mentality. You want to direct all your disappointment and anger at somebody else. Maybe God, Proverbs 19:3. Or you've been hurt and you want to take out your hurt on other people. And so it's easy to kind of fall into that trap. You develop a who cares attitude. Well, who cares? What does it matter? You know, it's kind of life is pointless and life is meaningless. And so it's easy to go down that route. You develop a very low view of the human race and the value of human life. Like Job's wife, curse God and die. Just get it over with. I've heard people like justify suicide by saying like, well, the person that committed suicide did the most logical thing. Their life stinks, and so why not end it? And that's kind of this mentality here. Just get it over with. You know, you're in misery, just end the misery. You start thinking that people are the problem and that people need to be eradicated from the planet. And so it's easy. We have a lot of people that fit in that category. All these people, and people are the problem, and I don't want to be around people, which is a huge mistake, because people are the most interesting thing on the planet, even far beyond the planet, far beyond the planet. I mean, and I like the planet. I think it's a pretty cool planet. But far beyond the stars that you see out there at night, and far beyond the Grand Canyon and Yosemite and Yellowstone and all of that type of stuff, what's most interesting is the people. I don't know about you, but that's what's most interesting. I mean, you can go to the Grand Canyon and look, okay, and you look, and there it is. Okay, and you go like, well, pretty cool, okay, but there it is. But what really intrigues you if you meet somebody there and have an interesting conversation with them and hear their story. Okay, that's even more amazing than what you're looking at is the person you're talking to. And that's almost like, that's kind of what makes the whole experience. I would hate to travel alone. The whole idea of traveling the world alone would sound like, it'd be like going to a restaurant and just ordering a salad all the time. And maybe some of you love salad, but it was like, okay, but isn't there something more here? Like, it would be like that, because what makes the journey worthwhile is that there's somebody with you. That's to me what really adds the thing, that the people are what add the spice to the whole thing. By myself, things are a little bit bland, all by myself. And so it's the people that make things amazing. You know, you get in this dark place where you start brooding over things. You're brooding over all, kind of like 1 Corinthians chapter 13, it says, love does not take account of wrongs. Well, you're doing that. You're doing the opposite of that. You're adding up all your wrongs, and you're nursing them, and you got a little drawer where you put them all, and here's all the injustices, here's all the slights, and here's all the wrongs against me, and you no longer think about what's true, what's pure, what's right, what's good, and you resent when someone tries to give you advice. You resent when someone tries to help you see the bright side. And have you been that way before? Like, you're in a bad mood and someone's trying to cheer you up, you know, and you're going like, get out of here, you know. Maybe see somebody's Facebook post and they're just, it's a happy thing and you're just going, get out of here. You know what I mean? You know, I don't want to see that. I want to be in my foul mood right now. I don't want your happy, you know. I don't want your kind of like little Snow White bird song that you're trying to sing to me right now, going, you know, get out of here. I want to be in my dark place right now. I don't want to see the bright side of the situation. I know what that feels like. And here's the other one, is that you don't see your own sins. And if you're always thinking about the sins of other people, but you don't see your own, that should be a red flag. you don't see the suffering that you have caused. Or maybe that you are continuing to cause because you haven't taken care of something. You're not seeing how you're part of the problem. And that how you could be part of the solution. I mean, how could I be part of the solution right now? How could I make this a better experience right now? How could I lift everybody up right now? How could I encourage everybody right now? How could I keep everyone going right now? And that's important. And I think that's maturity. I think maturity is where people are kind of getting down in a little funky mood. And you say, okay, we're gonna try to bump everything up. And I would say that a father, that's part of a job, the job of a father in a family. Everyone's in the car, we're getting a little skunky mood. Okay, we're going to pull people out of that. We're going to sing a song, okay, or we're going to do this or whatever. But we're going to do something to lift everybody up and pull everybody out of the dark mood that they're all falling into. Okay. I know there was one time in the car that all three kids were screaming at one time. And it lasted for about 30 seconds or so. And I said, okay, that was an F. You got an F. You guys all got an F on that one. And I said, we can do better than that. We can do a lot better than that. Okay, that just wasn't good. That wasn't good. That was a big fail on everyone's part right there. Okay, so we can do better than that. Suffering and happiness. There are people, though, that would argue, though, that the suffering of this world outweighs any benefit. It's a cruel world. It's a harsh, cruel world. And it's so painful and that it just outweighs any sort of happiness here. But I found people that go down that road that start having that pessimistic, negative view of human existence often artificially inflate the suffering side of things and discount the good that's in the world. The Bible makes it clear, even after sin enters, there's still a lot of good here. There's still a lot of good in this world. One is that God came here and Jesus died for our sins. That's pretty good. John 3:16. God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. Or Romans chapter 5, 6 through 8. While we were still helpless, Christ died for the ungodly. Man, that's amazing. You've been born into a world where, yeah, sin's in the world. Okay, what's the good news? The good news is the Creator loved you so much that He gave His life for you. And if you follow Him, you can be with Him forever in bliss. I don't know why people don't like that. I don't know why more people don't like that. I don't know why people are opting for, what is it? This world's a hard place, and when you die, and you're dead, and that's it. Yay! Boy, that's cheering. Why do people opt for that rather than, you know, there's a lot of good here, but there's even far more after this life. We're just surrounded by a lot of good. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 4. Everything created by God is good. Nothing is rejected if it's received with gratitude. There's a lot of good here. I mean, on Thursday, me and the kids stopped by. Corey talked about this. Bonneville Fish Hatchery. We stopped there. Okay. Gorgeous day. I mean, perfect weather. We get out. Perfect parking spot right by the picnic table. We get out. We went over and fed the trout, the big trout. And it says they're not supposed to be this big. But because they get fed every day, they're this big. And that was cool, and seeing the big sturgeon come through. And then we went over to the picnic table in this gorgeous place and pulled out our snacks out of the cooler and sat there, and in the sunshine and the fresh air, and you're in the gorge, and there's the trees around you and the blue Columbia, and you're going like, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, there's a lot of good in this life, is there not? I mean, even after sin enters, it's like, this is pretty good. We're up in Yakima. It's a bright sunny morning. We're with people that they live next to a Honeycrisp apple orchard. You got this view. You got a cup of coffee. Someone made you crepes and bacon for breakfast. Pretty good. Pretty good. And there's just a lot of things like that. This world is filled with, even with its suffering. And you know what? That's one reason maybe I don't watch the news anymore. And I've really thought about taking a complete break from all electronic stuff. Except for, I got my computer, I need to pop on, check my email. But I really thought about, even in the car, like no music, no nothing, just no radio. And I'm just going to, enjoy my life. I don't know if that will be something I do or not. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10, but I know, it just seems like when I'm focused on the things of God and God's creation and not listen to all the noise out there, I see more of the good and less of the bad. I know you can't put your head in the sand, you can't be a monk that goes and lives in a cave, right? But I'm going to try to be the best example I can be and talk to people about God and stuff like that. But it doesn't mean I have to consume all their stuff. Maybe I don't need to be listening to that song right now. Maybe there's a better thought I should have in my mind. I don't know. It's nice to have a break from. We've been a place, no television, no nothing like that. We just enjoyed the beauty of God's creation and enjoyed each other and stuff like that. We just had good stuff. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 10 says, "The one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his life from speaking deceit." You want to, I mean, even in this life, you can see good days. And there's a lot of good. But you have to be looking for it. And do you want to find it? Because I think it's easy, when you're negative, it's easy to be negative because you'll find negative. That's easy to find. Negative is easy to find. It's like seaweed on a beach. It's easy to find. Or it's like the little agates. They're easy to find. There's a lot of stuff on the beach. That's easy to find. Anyone can find that. Sand fleas. Those are easy to find. But finding the good, I think finding the good demands something of you. If I'm looking for good, then I need to be good myself. If I'm going to be looking, honestly looking for the good. And when you're looking for the bad, you're in a blame mode. When you're looking for the good, you're in a growth mode. I'm looking for the good in people. Not only that, but here's the other thing. The privilege of being born opens you up to a whole lot of stuff. If you're never born, no heaven. That is, if you're never conceived, you never exist, no heaven. But how about this? Marriage, family, children. An aspect of work is very pleasurable. I did a good job today. I felt good about that. I help people out. Friendship. Hopefully we haven't become cynical about all those things. That. Because the world is cynical about all of those things. Marriage, family, kids, type of stuff like that. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days of your fleeting life. That's not cynical. Or Psalm 127. And none of these things are easy, but they are amazing blessings. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are children the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. And it's easy to become cynical about kids, too. They're a lot of work. But there's a big blessing there, too, that we need to make sure that we don't miss. In both marriage and family and parenting and friendship. How many people out there, you guys, how many people out there going like, I'm not going to be part of any church because I'm not into the drama, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, their churches have drama and relationships take work, okay? Okay, but, so you could be by yourself? Is that going to be a lot of fun? I don't think so. Whatever sort of challenges come with being part of a congregation, and challenges come with it, I think the rewards far outweigh the challenges. And I think that's true of anything else. Friendship. I don't want to have friends because I know friends will let me down, so you just could be by yourself. Or, man, I'm not going to get married because I see all this stuff out there and she's just going to take all the stuff I've got, and, you know, or what, leave me or whatever. Or I'm not going to have kids because they're messy and loud and whatever and take a lot of work. So, be careful. My theory in life is be very careful about settling for what you consider safe. It's a good, safe bet. You know, like, it's kind of like McDonald's. Now, there are times I feel like McDonald's, but I think, I have to be honest, McDonald's is like a C. That's like a C in if you're going to grade food, it's kind of like a C. And it's always a C, just a C. It's not like one is a lot better than the other. It's like, it's a C. If you go to just understand, you're getting a C. I mean, there are just certain things in life to understand. If you're going down that road, you're going to get a C life. I don't want a C life. I'd rather have an A life. There are all sorts of blessings. Love, marriage, family, friendship. And also, but how do you measure happiness? How do you define it? And what is it? And be careful about chasing a happiness feeling. Because that's like where addiction starts. I'm chasing the thing that's going to give me that little bump right now. And, I mean, you do that and you will overspend. And you will overeat. And you will over this. And you will over that, etc. If you chase that. And at the end of the day, you will never find it. And we're only, not only that, but we're making a big mistake. And I felt this way before. You know, you kind of look to the heavens and say, I'm just trying to get stuff done. Why does it all work out? That is, you're wanting a trouble-free life. I mean, why can't I just head out the day and everything in a day go as the day is supposed to go? Why does there have to be hiccups? And why does there have to be like, oh no, you need that piece of paper. Oh no, oh, that's not working. Or what's going on there? That sort of thing. Okay. Why can't a day just go as a day is supposed to go? Why can't it just be smooth sailing? And I would be very careful of that. I understand the feeling. But you can have smooth sailing and be miserable. You ever been to a restaurant and there's a couple there, they don't have any kids, got plenty of money for the meal, and they picked up their meal and they complained about their meal and left like most of it have eaten? That's kind of what smooth sailing can do to you. I mean, when you're a parent, right? When you're a parent and you get a night out away from the kids, the first thing you have to do is just remember to slow down. Because sometimes when the kids are little, the food comes and you go like, go as fast as you can because there's a little clock ticking on that one. And just shovel it in and eat as fast as you can. And you have to realize that when you're out as a couple, you know, why are we just racing through our meal right now? And you see somebody else, no kids or anything, it's like, you have no distraction here. Not only that, but you can afford that. And you're picking at it and complaining, and it looks pretty good. And that's what smooth sailing can do to you. And I don't know. One of the challenges as your life gets older, and, you know, maybe your life gets older, maybe you're not having you don't have some of the challenges you had younger, whatever, and maybe things have smoothed out a little bit. Is I'm always trying to tell myself, Mark, do not become someone hard to please. Don't become someone who's lost sight of the fact of, hey, you and Cindy are together right now for a meal and you don't have a crying baby. You know, hey, be grateful. You know, be grateful. You know, don't become hard to please. Don't forget kind of you've arrived. You know, don't lose sight of the fact that you've arrived. And life is pretty good. And life, though, is not primarily, though, about finding a happiness feeling. Because the Bible would say that life is about obeying God, serving God, honoring God, glorifying God, like 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. Whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. That's life. And life is about growth. Life is about growing personally, growing spiritually. And life is about adding virtues to your life, and not a little bit of it, but as much as you can. That you would become the most patient, kind, loving, generous person that you can possibly muster. That's the purpose of life. To help others make it to heaven, to separate yourself from the evil of the world, that holiness is the real goal, and happiness is simply, it's a byproduct. Happiness is one of those things. You go out and do what you should do today. You do what you should do today. And at the end of today, you're tired. But you go like, I feel good about what I did today. That's what you're looking for. That's the feeling that should show up. I feel good about what I did today. I feel good about what I accomplished today. And then I wanted to pop through something else here and take a look at something. Okay. There we go. Here's something when you hit a challenge. You hit a challenge, you hit a wall. Something that really tests you. It's a good opportunity to say, well, am I a genuine Christian or not? There's something I always see when we get hit with hot weather in Oregon, when the real hot weather shows up. It's the cars by the side of the road. Because very cold weather and very hot weather, I always notice more cars by the side of the road. Because temperature extremes will test whether your vehicle has a problem or not. I mean, it will, you know, 100 degree weather will really bring out whether you're, hey, how's your water pump doing? How's your radiator doing? You got no fluid, etc. But at least what that does is that tests your vehicle to say, hey, can I trust this thing? And that's the way that trials do to your life, is that at least the trial, the really, really hot weather in your life, or whether it shows up in your life right now, the heat wave that has shown up in your life, at least it says, hey, am I who I claim to be? Have I made any progress? Do I think I'm patient or am I patient? Do I think I'm kind or am I? Do I think I know my Bible or actually do I know my Bible? Do I actually have a genuine prayer life? And I guess that's, to me, that would be a fortunate thing or a blessing, at least to say, well, at least this shows me where I am on the path and what I need to be working on right now. Not only that, but skip over here on that as we close. So, which direction am I, as I grow as a Christian, am I this morning someone who I don't feel sorry for myself? Or am I someone that does feel sorry for myself? Do I feel I'm learning and I want to learn? I want to keep on learning. Or I don't want to learn. I know everything I need to know. You look into the future and are you looking optimistically towards the future? I'm anticipating the future. Or are you living just for the moment? Are you humble? Do you see your faults? You see your sins? You can make fun of yourself. Okay? You see what you are. Or are you like arrogant? I'm smarter than everybody else. You count your blessings? Or are you focused and preoccupied and somewhat bitter about what you don't have? So, Do you realize that whatever suffering you're going through is just temporary? Or do you have you convinced yourself this will never end? There's no light at the end of the tunnel. Are you moving on from a trial? Or are you making it the center of your life and the trial defines you? Which one is that? Are you saying, well, I don't like this. This is not enjoyable, but it will improve me. You know, you don't have to love it. Or are you saying this is pointless, this is vain, etc.? I don't know why this is happening. Are you patient with gradual growth? Or are you someone that says, I want an instant fix, and you're tempted to jump for what is offered as an instant fix? Are you trusting God and His Word, or are you trusting the voices in your head? It's good to see you this morning. The Bible says that to become a Christian, he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. Let's be standing and singing the invitation song.